Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about eliminating screen conflicts and problems in their home. This is Melanie Hempe, and I am so glad you are here today that you've joined us, and I hope that you are having a great summer day. You are one of our regular listeners. Welcome back. And thank you so much for sharing this podcast with your friends. It's because of you that we have so many people listening now. And if you are a new friend to Screen Strong, we are glad that you found us. Today, Olivia Kernikan, one of our Screen Strong ambassadors, and actually someone at Screen Strong that wears many, many hats over here, is going to join me to discuss a topic we talk about. It's called Back to School. And we're going to give you some tips for Screen Strong families. She has been working with us behind the scenes for the past, 5 years, I think, and she has seen so much, just like me. She has been on the front line, right, Olivia? Welcome.
Yeah, it's interesting to be on this side of the podcast, as it were, and I can't believe we're already in August.
No, I know it. Olivia is one of the folks over here that gets to have a lot of aha moments with me, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah. To put it mildly, a lot of aha moments.
A lot of aha moments and a lot of, oh my goodness, can you believe what just happened?
Yeah. We have a lot of stories. Yeah.
We just, over the years, I mean, it would be really fun to sit down and just kind of write down some of our highlights, because we have so many families that contact us. And Olivia is one of the first people who sees those stories and those emails right away. She has seen it all.
Mm-hmm. A lot of presentations, a lot of workshops, heard a lot of Q&As, witnessed a lot of life-changing things happen, the same questions over and over. And yeah, I'm happy to be here to talk about back to school, because that's a big one.
Yeah. And back to school is where things kind of surface, I think.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, not to just like dive right in, but I think parents are able to have a real foothold in their home once they get educated, start understanding the Screen Strong lifestyle. You know, they can protect what's happening to their kids under their own roof. And then any change in that routine, be it school or going over to a friend's house or, you know, going to visit family, is where I think a lot of parents panic, because then they feel like, oh my gosh, how do I keep up this routine? And it's so good for my kid. And how do I keep control of this when I send them out into what they inevitably have to do in the world?
Yeah, it's definitely a transition time. And so we were talking, we had a couple other things scheduled, but we actually pushed some things back because we realized we really need to talk about school right now. I'm still pretending like school isn't going to happen.
I thought it was June. Like, I don't know how it's August.
I know. I'm like, no. What? When you said back to school, I'm like, no, it's not back to school. It can't be back to school, but it is. We're all going back to school. Or at least, you know, for you, mom and dad, I know that your kids are really going back to school, but it really is a transition time in your home. So do your kids love school? That's a question. They should love school. Livy, I know you love school. Oh, you were like a nerd.
Still am. I wear that badge of honor proudly. Still yes. Are.
Well, this is a great test for screen addiction. So think about this real quickly right now. Do your kids love school? They should. They're kids. And I remember Richard Free talking about this. He's the author of The Wired Child. When we first met you many years ago, he brought this up in a talk, and I thought, that's brilliant. That is a really good way to know if your kids are balanced. It's a myth that kids should hate school. Kids should not hate school. They should love school. But if they have a lot of screen use in their life, they're going to like their screens a lot more, and school is going to become lame. But at our house, school is anything but lame at our house. In fact, our kids, the younger two especially, just really love, they love school and they love everything about it. You know how kids obsess over video games and social media? Well, that's how Screen Strong kids and my kids obsess over school. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. They love it. They love everything about it. The peers, the sports, the challenges that they have there, the competition, not just with grades, but with spelling bees mm-hmm. and reading challenges and all that kind of stuff. They love their teachers. Now, this is something that I can say that is very healthy. It's very healthy for kids to have teachers in their life and other adults in their life that speak into their life. In fact, tonight, we are having one of their teachers over for dinner. We would never really do that before, but it's like they love their teachers so much. And so anyway, that is a great tip. We'll talk about some tips in a minute, but I am reminded of how wonderful the Screen Strong lifestyle is every day, but especially last week when they had their first student council meeting. It was a planning meeting. And of course, school hasn't even started yet, but they had this big planning meeting. And one of our kids is a class president and the other is a student body president. So they really had a lot of fun. And by the way, they accomplished those things without social media or smartphones. I know that's kind of hard to believe.
Old school
campaigning. It's called talking to people in the hall. And I do think they know just about everybody's name in the school. It's kind of fun because when you are spending more time, you know, in school and loving school, this is what happens. And also, I think the reason why that they won these elections is because kids without smartphones tend to have more friends than kids with smartphones. This is easy to prove through the research that Jean Twenge has done, that they're happier, they have a better social life, they have more friends, and they know more people. They know their names. Like I said, they speak to them on campus. My kids are not better than any other kids. They just speak another social language. And they spend their time differently. So anyway, school hasn't started yet, but they had this first student council meeting last week and they had a blast. And I wish you could see this huge whiteboard of all the things that they're going to do this year. They are so excited. There's dances and social stuff. They're starting a newspaper. There's all kinds of stuff that they're doing. In fact, I'm sitting here, Olivia, wondering if they're going to study. I don't see that on the whiteboard. But anyway, I'll have to talk to them about that. No, they have, their grades are fine. And
knowing the twins, they'll find a way to make that not a priority and do the fun stuff.
They're going to do all the fun stuff. And here it's all over this whiteboard. It's so funny. I was looking at this morning and no wonder they love school so much. Look at all this fun stuff that they're going to be doing. But anyway, I just want you to know that it is possible for kids to love school. It is possible for them not to dread going back. And you know, your kids love to see their friends and they love to get back in that social world. But with too much screen time and too many screen activities, they will miss a lot of the fun things that are happening at school. So today, let's just not keep everybody too long, Olivia, but I wanted to go through just some back to school facts and some tips and some things that y'all should be thinking about right now. And I am going to give you these tips, and these are all just from experience, not only from me, but from many, many of the families that Olivia and I work with over here. So first of all, we know that screens are a big part of school now, right? They're everywhere. And we get a lot of questions in our Facebook group about, what do I do? My kids are getting a Chromebook. What do I do? They're getting a laptop for the first time. You know, they're like in third grade or something ridiculous. And they want to know what to do. Well, first of all, screens are a big part of school for sure. But at Screen Strong, we do not believe that every child needs a personal device at their desk at all times. Of course they don't. That's silly talk. Yeah. They don't need a personal device. As y'all remember, our oldest son's laptop was the turning point for us and his gaming addiction. So I'm very passionate about parents taking charge of this situation so it doesn't become a problem. You need to recognize the warning signs before everything gets out of hand. Unlike me, I did not recognize the warning signs. So let's first start with just a few facts. I think I've got 10 facts here, and these are facts that I just throwed out for y'all. Number one, parental controls do not keep your kids safe. So just like Olivia said a minute ago, you know, there's a lot you can do at home. You've had your kids home all summer. You've been limiting things, and there's a lot that you can control by sending them outside to play, and you're sort of more, you know, in charge, or you're leading their day.
right? And the time and their pockets of time. And you're putting things in front of them like books and Play-Doh or Legos and Rubik's Cubes or whatever it is. But when they get to school, I want everyone to understand that parental controls will not keep your kids safe while they were at school. Any child can Google how to hack any parental control. In fact, you should try it after you finish listening to this podcast. Think about the parental controls that you have and Google how to hack that particular parental control. I could do that for you and I could read all that right now, but it's really easy to find. And so, right? So your kids can find this really easy. There are new ideas every day. And you'll never stay ahead. And Olivia, I know that you know how this works because you are more of an IT brain and you understand the limitations there.
For sure. And there's been so many times when you've come to me and said, okay, this is what people are saying their kids are doing. Can you go recreate it and see if you can see what they're doing? And it is easy. It can take about two clicks. And we say this all the time, but if you're going to allow devices, the bare minimum is to have parental controls, but nothing is better than, first of all, not giving them the devices
in the first access
place. And yeah. The access in the first place. But parents just need to know what they're giving their kids. And there is absolutely no way to stay on top of parental controls and what they block and don't block, and parental controls don't block social media, what you can access on social media. So, I mean, it's a slippery slope to head in that direction.
Yeah. And we talk about it a lot over here because it is a lot of the emails that we get center around this. And so think about parental controls like a seatbelt. So you definitely want to put seatbelts on every time you get in the car. But if you are a crazy driver on a busy highway with huge trucks, you're seatbelt isn't really going to help you. I mean, it's good that you have the seatbelt, but just think about it this way. You wouldn't put your 10-year-old in the car with the seatbelt and tell him to go drive on a highway. Of course not. The seatbelt is not really going to help him. And that's how you have to think about parental controls. You need them. They are necessary, but they are not the be all end all.
Well, and the other thing I would just throw in there following the seatbelt metaphor is that your child may have on a seatbelt, but they may be going to school with someone who doesn't have a seatbelt.
No, that's exactly right. We can't control. I hate to keep using that word, but we can't structure. We can't lead our kids when we throw them out with everybody else who doesn't have their seatbelt on.
Yeah.
Just like you said. So the second fact is this. The school's firewall does not keep unwanted content out. So I know that you've got to kind of stop what you're doing here and listen to me say this again, because I think I was that parent, like many parents, who think that surely the school wouldn't allow certain things to happen on my kid's computer. And we have this false sense of security, thinking that they have some sort of power over this, and they don't. And I have talked to many IT people at different schools here in my area. I mean, I used to have regular conversations with them, and on a regular basis, they would tell me all the new things that kids are doing to get out of the firewall. And this one IT man told me that every morning he goes into his office and he figures out the IP addresses where all the new VPNs are coming in, all the proxy servers. And he actually has to go to that parent and call them in the morning and say, your child has done this and this, that. He said he's finally stopped doing that. He said it's so overwhelming because, you know, a virtual private network, the VPNs, there's so many of them. There's like mm-hmm. so many every week they pop up, and the school cannot block this. And so we think that the school can block it, and they can't. So I don't know if you realize that Google Translate is a VPN, right? So a lot of kids have Google Translate on their computer. They can just get out on different sites through Google Translate. They can use their smartphone as hotspots. And this is probably the number one way that kids get around what a firewall would be, you know, on their computer or in the school area, is their smartphone. So if your child is coming to school with a smartphone, they can very easily switch that over to the hotspot, and then they're out of the school firewall. And I hope that's making sense to y'all. So then you can think, well, I'm not going to send my kid to school with a smartphone. And that's a great idea. However, they can get on the hotspot of anyone in the school that has a smartphone. I mean, it's important for you to understand as a parent, and there's nothing that you can like there's nothing that the school can do about it. The school is, their hands are sort of tied. I mean, can you only imagine having thousands of kids come into your property every day and trying to manage all their screens?
While giving them an education.
While trying to teach them something. Yeah, most parents can't even manage two kids at their house, right? So we're asking teachers and we're asking school administrators to do a whole lot. But it is, there are some things that you can do to really help this. I also wanted to just mention under this whole idea of school firewalls and keeping our computers safe, we learned this lesson, and I have had a lot of people ask me, well, what parental controls do we use? And we just use a Microsoft free families account, and it's Microsoft. It's on, I guess, any, you know, Mac or PC. You can find the free version of whatever your parental control thing is and your program. And the way we figured out how to do it is we actually block everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. So don't like fall off your chair if you're listening, but we do block everything. And then we tell it what to allow. So there may be like 10 sites that we allow. And if our kids are at school, and we still do this now, even though they're in high school, believe it or not, and it works just fine. So don't let anybody tell you this doesn't work, because it does. It works just fine. And so if they're on a site that the history teacher says, okay, we need to go to this site or whatever, and they click the button that says, I want to request this site, within seconds, my husband and I get a pop-up on our phone and we just hit accept. And it doesn't happen much, but it is a way for us to still kind of keep these guardrails up. And our kids don't mind it. They really don't mind it. I know that you think that they might mind it, but they just don't. It just works. I mean, the first few weeks it was annoying, but then it just works. And what you end up realizing is, as a student, you end up realizing there's a lot of things that you were probably doing that you don't need to do, that were really wasting your time. And this just keeps it in check. You know, I always say, Olivia, that teenagers in high school are the section of our society that do not have any accountability. No. Isn't that interesting, right? Because when you go get a job, your boss is going to see what you're doing on the computer, for crying out loud. I mean, you've got to be accountable to the place that you're working. But for some reason, high school kids, it's like we send them to school, they're out in the wild west of the internet, and there's no accountability.
Well, maybe we need to be thinking more of school as a teenager's job, that yeah, they have to follow the steps to be accountable to the job. And right now their job is learning. So what is the best way right. for them to learn?
Not being distracted with all that. So the school's firewall is fact number two. The school's firewall is not going to keep unwanted content out. You as a parent are still leading in this department. You still have to care about your kids more than the school does. Of course you do. And you have to be their coach, and you have to care about what's happening to them during the day. The third fact is that multitasking is a myth. Your child cannot shift between activities. When they do, it waters down each activity. So you can only imagine being back in high school for a minute and having a laptop and having everything in the universe pop up on your screen while your teacher is trying to teach you a math problem or something about English. It is impossible for your child not to start messaging his friends or looking up bathing suits on Amazon. There's a lot of shopping that goes mm-hmm. on about learning in high schools. In fact, I read a statistic about Amazon that said something that teenagers bought a lot of, and I can't remember what it was, but that all those sales were happening during the school day. And I know this from having my own kids, that this is a big problem, you know, especially if you're sitting behind someone who's shopping for bikinis on Amazon. It's a very distracting thing. And there are studies that show that if you sit around kids that are on their social media and whatnot, you know, on their laptop, that user, or that you as a user, also it's not beneficial for you to get distracted. So it's this multitasking thing that we're asking our kids to just focus. Adults can't even do it. I mean, let's face it, if you're sitting in a seminar, right, and you have your laptop open, Libby, I'm sure you wouldn't do this.
Of course not. I have never done never. What you're about to say.
I would be taking notes, right? I'm justified in having my laptop open because I'm taking notes, but I can promise you that I would probably be checking my social media or my email, or I would be checking to see, Olivia, if you were emailing me something, because I'm sure it would be super important and I'd have to get back with you right away. So,
and if you're a Mac user and your texts get sent to your laptop.
See, that's, yeah. Okay, that's a whole nother thing.
That's like a whole nother conversation.
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere. You just can't. And then the teachers are in the front of the classroom. They don't see what's going on. That's why I tell teachers, we need to do a show just for tips for teachers, because we can tell them how to do some workarounds here in the classroom. But one thing is that teachers should be standing in the back of the classroom so they can see what's happening on these kids' laptops. I know that sounds crazy, but no, but again, like I just said, these teenagers have no accountability. Like, nobody's even watching to see what's happening. I walk in high schools all the time because I do presentations in high schools, and it is 100% of the time I'm watching kids, you know, just as I walk through the hall and I'm looking into the classrooms, and they're not doing math in math. They're watching YouTube videos in English, and they're playing video games in their science lab.
Well, and the one thing I will say is teachers are overwhelmed with having to manage all of this while having to teach the kids. So I have quite a few friends who are teachers, actually, and some of them work in public schools, some of them work in private schools. But the issue across the board is, you know, they're just trying to educate and teach the children, and then they're having to deal with this other unknown quantity of, they're saying they're spending most of their time controlling devices. So my heart goes out to the teachers, because they're doing the best that they can. But the fact of the matter is, they may have 30 students in the classroom, and if 20 of them are on some kind of device, there's only so much the teachers can do. You know, we were saying earlier, we're asking a lot of the school's firewall to keep them out. Well, I think we ask a lot of the teachers to manage the devices for the kids.
It's impossible. Yeah. It is like shoveling the snow while it's still snowing. It's impossible. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about snow right now because it's so hot, but it is impossible. It's not fair. It's not right. I know that technology can be used, of course, for certain good things, but the risk associated with it, really, those risks are really hurting our kids, and ultimately hurting our kids. It makes it a ton harder for the teachers too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My heart does go out to them. I don't even know what I would do if I were standing in front of a classroom and everybody was playing Fortnite. I just don't know. And you think we're exaggerating, and we're not exaggerating. I would love for y'all to read Screen Schooled.
Oh, it's really good.
Yeah. That book is fabulous.
Matt and Joe are the best.
Yes. And they just take you behind the scenes and what's really happening. And it's not to fear monger, to scare people off. We just got to get our facts. You know, parents, you've got to understand what's happening to your kids when you drop them off at school, so you can help them and so you can help coach them. So let's look at number 4. Kids do not need smartphones for homework. This is a fact. This is a fact. We know lots of kids who don't have smartphones through Screen Strong, and they actually are very smart kids, and they do plenty of homework. So this idea that your child, because we hear it in our Facebook group a lot, Libby and I get emails all the time, well, my kid has to have a smartphone because the teacher said, or my kid has to have a smartphone because they have to talk to their friends while they're doing their homework. None of that's true.
Which doesn't that doesn't even make any sense to me.
Right.
My brain.
No, it doesn't. But this is the number one reason why kids get so distracted while they're doing their homework. I can't even imagine a worse thing to have. There's nothing worse than having a smartphone loaded with YouTube videos and Netflix while you're trying to do your homework.
Or even just the ability to text, and your friend who is also procrastinating on their homework, you know, is texting you and saying, I don't want to do this. Let's go. I mean, it doesn't even matter if they're actively, you know, watching YouTube. If their phone is sitting next to them and it is pinging with notifications, it literally doesn't matter what the notification is for. It could be communication. It could be
weather.
One of those automatic notifications that your phone sends you. It grabs your attention immediately. Your phone lights up. I mean, it happens to me. I have to sleep with my phone plugged in on the other side of the room. Right. I use my phone as my alarm. And so I'm an adult, and I have to sleep with it on the other side of the room. I have to keep it over there because sometimes it just and I don't even have the volume on my phone. It's just that, you know, the little buzzing that happens.
Oh, just that little vibrating.
Yeah, thing, it just immediately 100% captures my attention.
So I want to just ask you, you just said something. So are you saying that teenagers procrastinate?
I would never say such a ridiculous thing. Procrastination, teenagers, what?
I think that is the middle name of every teenager out there is procrastination.
How long can I put it off before the anxiety sets in?
Yeah, exactly. And I know some of y'all have students that are perfect and that they're probably girls and they love to do their homework. And I'm not saying that boys don't like to do homework, but they all sort of want to be doing something different.
Teenagers naturally, and it's one of the best things about them, they are designed to push boundaries. They're pushing the boundaries to figure out their identity, to see what kind of person they are. And one of those boundary pushings is, hey, this person told me to do this thing. How long can I put it off? Like, what is my limit? Whether they're conscious of it or not, that is what they're designed to do, is just push those boundaries, procrastinate. What can I get done? And some of them love the adrenaline rush of, sure. I mean, I went to high school with kids who were doing homework 10 minutes before school started, and I would look at them and I would get anxiety watching them do it. Now, I did procrastinate. I mean, I used to be a procrastinator, but the anxiety it caused me was not worth it. And then these kids doing homework 10 minutes before class, I'm like, I don't, my brain couldn't process it because it just freaked me out so much. I'm like, are you not stressed? But they love the adrenaline rush of procrastination.
Well, and they're already anxious and this is making them more anxious. But time management is the hardest thing to learn as far as executive function skills. And our teenagers are trying really hard to function in a world where time is really important, and time management is the essence of everything that they're doing, you know, that organizing their backpack, managing their time the night before, like what you're talking about as far as managing homework time. When you throw a smartphone in the mix, you are sabotaging this whole thing for your kids. And you can't say, oh, well, they're going to have to learn to use it one day. That has nothing to do with where their brain is right now. They cannot do it. You cannot do it. I cannot do it. If we've got an important thing to write or something to study, we cannot be distracted by our phone.
High school is not the time to learn how to use a smartphone.
No. We've got so many other things they got to learn before they learn how to use a smartphone. And honestly, it will take them 5 minutes to learn how to use a smartphone.
2 seconds.
Later. 2 seconds, not even 5 minutes. So our job is to help them learn how to have these habits. So this is a thing. If your teacher is telling you that your child has to have the phone, or if your kid comes home and says, oh, my teacher says I have to have a smartphone, then what you do is you call the teacher. You actually have a phone call. Maybe you have a meeting, you know, if a phone call. But I'm not telling you to even email or text. I'm saying get on the phone, have a conversation with the teacher and say, we have decided, since we've had such a great summer being screen strong, that we're not going to allow smartphones in school this year. And we would love for you to work with us on this. And I think that the teacher would be absolutely thrilled.
I can't think of a single teacher who would push back against that.
No, they're not going to push back on it. And trust me, we've done this for the last 4 years. Our kids have not had smartphones in high school. Everybody told me it couldn't be done. They're on lots of sports teams. They have lots of communications, but they have GroupMes on their laptops. Remember, they have laptops. This doesn't mean they need a small computer in their pocket 24 hours a day. So it's not like, you know, it's not like Screen Strong Kids and our kids don't have access to this stuff. They do, but it's on their laptop. And we know from all of the science and the research and all the statistics out there that you use the phone a lot more because of the access is so much easier. It's a lot harder to carry a big laptop in your pocket around with you all day. Mm-hmm. You tend to just check it when you need to check it, which is the way it's supposed to be. And so talk to the teacher about it and stand up for your kids when it comes to this. They do not need smartphones at school. They do not need smartphones for homework. If there's some weird thing that has to happen, then at night, then you tell the teacher, by the way, if you can't email it, like everything you can do on a smartphone, you can do on a computer, right? So if the teacher is saying, well, I need to email them this thing, or they need to text this thing, or need to text each other, guess what? They can email it and it works a lot better and it's a lot less distracting. So it's a myth that you need smartphones for homework. If your child needs to talk to a peer while they're doing homework, they can actually pick up the phone, have a conversation, finish the conversation and hang up and then finish their homework. This ongoing 4-hour homework thing every night.
Constant communication is not a good thing.
Yeah. And my daughter actually, and both of our younger boys are in a lot of sports and they spend a lot of time in sports. And all these kids that don't have any sports, they actually spend like 6 hours a night on their phone. And then they complain that they don't have any time to do their homework. And it's all a myth out there.
Well, and I would just throw my hat in the ring as a person who can't do sports. My extracurricular activities was theater. If you're going to rehearsal, it means that you finish school. Let's say you finish school at 4. Rehearsal starts at 4:30. You're in rehearsal until 9.
Yep.
You have to figure out how to do your homework in the in-between time and make sure that you are not distracted if you have to do homework when you get home. So whether it's a sport, theater rehearsal, choir, music lessons, it doesn't matter. That the time management is really important and smartphones just destroy time management.
Yeah, smartphones will drag out that homework time to be 4 hours. And quite frankly, if I was doing 4 hours of homework every single night, I'd be stressed too. So these kids are stressed, but they're not stressed for the right reason.
Yeah.
They're stressed because they're not getting it done. And you can solve it so easy. It's a very easy problem to solve, to calm your kids down, to slow down their activities when they finally get home. You've got to slow it down, but a smartphone will put everything in high gear and they won't get the work done and they won't get it done well.
And then it augments their anxiety because they're like, oh my gosh, I need to go to bed and I've been doing my homework for 5 hours, even though the homework probably would have taken an hour if they weren't on their phone. Yeah.
So the fifth fact is that lunchtime is for socialization, not for checking social media. If we could just get rid of smartphones during lunch, that would be a huge step in the right direction. When you think about when your kids go to school and they're in class and they have a few little minutes in the hallway and then they're in class again and then another 5 minutes till the bell rings, they don't have that much time to socialize in the school day. So it's during the kind of recess periods. And honestly, it's really during that lunchtime where they learn so many executive function skills and they learn so many social skills. And I would argue that a big part of your child's school experience is the social skills. I like the academic stuff is important, but the social skills that they're learning during lunch is critical. But if you've got every other kid on a smartphone, their nose is buried, they're not making eye contact, they're not talking to people, this is not good. So in our school, just a couple of years ago, they actually banned smartphones from the high school. And it started at first where they did not have them in the high school. You weren't allowed to bring them. Now, of course, kids did. And that was all a whole big policing thing. But still, that was the rule. But they still allowed them during lunchtime. And there were so many complaints from not only the parents, but from the kids. The kids want to talk to each other. It's the only time they have. And so last year, they pulled them out of the lunchroom as well. That's been fabulous. That's just been a wonderful. And we're going to talk some more. We have another show coming up about how to get smartphones out of your school. So hang on for that. We will be discussing that a little bit more. But remember that lunchtime is for socializing. So this is a whole nother reason why you don't need smartphones at school. You do not need to text your kids during the day. And this falls into this whole thing. Please don't do that. Please wait till the end of the day before you text your kids at school. I think that the majority of texts that kids do get are from their parents. I keep hearing this from teachers over and over. It's not their friends. It's their parents. Mm-hmm. Tell the parents to stop texting their kids during the day. I mean, if it's 3:15, you have to figure out where they are every now and then, that's fine. But you should be making all those plans before they leave in the morning or the night before. So you shouldn't have to have all this communication with them during the day. And what we end up doing, because our kids usually leave their phones at home, they have Gab phones and they don't bring them, is I just call the front desk if there's some kind of a schedule emergency. And I love talking to the gal up there. We're really good friends. So it gives me time to chat with her and just give her a message. So number six, a fact. This is a fact. Note taking on paper is always better than note taking on a computer. It just is. Your brain processes it differently, especially when you're a teenager, and you could argue as a parent and say, well, I take notes faster. Well, yeah, your brain is done. It's fully connected. Theirs is not. It's much easier for them to focus when they're actually handwriting. They can actually think. You're increasing the odds that they're going to learn the material better when they take notes by hand. We are very big on this with our own kids, and I do see a dramatic difference there. Number seven, I mentioned this a minute ago, that kids who sit in front of class do better than kids that are sitting behind kids that are shopping for bikinis on Amazon. So if this is just a fact, it's also a great tip that you don't need to be the over-controlling parent, but you can tell your child and you can tell the teacher, I would love for my son to sit in the front of the classroom. And if you have assigned seats, ask them ahead of time. They will accommodate this. If your child, I have one that loves to sit in the front, because I don't know, he started doing this early and he just loves it
better. Yeah, I was the front sitter for sure.
You were front of the room. Of course you were. You know,
these nerd.
Overachieving Olivia. Sitting in the front. I bet you were the teacher's pet too.
Oh yeah, I got accused of that. I cannot tell you how many times, and it really upset me when I was in high school. And I mean, the insults that kids come up with, it would be like, you just like to learn, don't you? And it's
like, ooh.
Ooh, got him.
I know. Well, it is really important. And this is something you may not even, you know, realize, that location in the classroom makes a big difference. So that's something that you can suggest right up here, right up front in the beginning of the year. Talk to your teacher and say, hey, is it okay if he sits in the front? It's not that he's being punished. It's he's going to be able to focus. He's not going to be as distracted by everybody else in the classroom who's on their computers doing the wrong thing, you know, or on their phones. Number eight, this is a fact. Most kids cheat in school, but the majority of parents think that their child doesn't cheat. So if you do the math on that, that just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
Many, many kids cheat. They don't even see finding an answer on a laptop is cheating anymore. The research says that if they Google an answer in during a test, they don't feel like it's cheating because
they consider it research.
They consider it research. They figured out a way to get the answer. So that's not cheating because I just got the answer. It just doesn't even make any sense. And honestly, I have some friends that teach at a university, at a D1 school, and they deal with cheating using, you know, technology with their adult students, not only just their college age students, but parents that go back to school are just so tempted to get subscriptions to these sites that actually have tests. This one teacher says she makes a new test every semester, but it gets uploaded to this site that actually has the test. She's like, how did they get my test? Well, somebody uploaded it. So there's so many ways. I don't know how teachers do it anymore. So it's so sad. But they are cheating. And the sad thing is that parents are believing that it's not happening to their kids. And that goes back to, you know, the blind spots that parents have. And we all have them. We all have blind spots. But this is a big, I don't know, big blind spot is the cheating. Mm-hmm. So I think the more screens that are allowed, the more cheating there is. It's just a fact. And it really, we want to believe that it has, that our kids are these strong moral citizens and whatnot. But they're faced with a lot of temptations, way more temptations than we were ever faced with in school. And we have to understand that you cannot build their ability to withstand this temptation. What you have to do is remove the access. You have to remove the temptation. So the best way, the research says, the best way to have willpower not to eat donuts is not to buy the donuts. Mm-hmm. It's not to buy the donuts and have them sit on the kitchen counter and walk around them every day. That is not how you build willpower. People with strong discipline and willpower stay far away from the temptation. And that's what we need to teach our families here and also our kids. So the more devices they have, the more they're going to be tempted to cheat. So number nine, textbooks are always better for concentration. Ask your teachers up front if you can find out the name of the textbooks that they're using, because they're more than likely they're going to be online, but you can nine times out of 10, you can get those textbooks in print. Mm-hmm. And this was a big turning point for us with one of our kids when we realized that he was struggling in a particular subject. When we got the textbook in print and got it like where he could actually hold it and sit down, turn the pages and read it and do all the stuff, he did so much better. And I would venture to say that most kids do better with an actual textbook. Your brain tracks differently when you're reading on paper than when you're reading on a screen, and it actually retains information better. So how do you do this? Well, how you do this is you go on eBay if you have to, or find a used bookstore even if you
have to. Thrift books is great.
Thrift books. So you can find textbooks. So if your school doesn't have them, ask them what they're using and just get the textbook. This will absolutely change the way they can concentrate and change the way they do school. Plus, then when they're doing homework, you don't have to have the screen up with all the pop-ups and all the stuff happening. The textbook doesn't have pop-ups. The textbook doesn't make noise and it doesn't get notifications so they can actually focus. So this is a huge fact that textbooks are better.
And your kids can build muscle tone by hauling them around all day.
Yes. That's true. That can really work. Okay. That's a dual purpose, I guess.
Dual benefit.
Dual benefit. Okay. Number 10, personal screens are not necessary in the classroom. And what I mean by this is, even though we live in this age of technology and we are all about all of our screens and all the wonderful stuff, the teacher can still have a screen at the front of the classroom. That's fine. The screens are fine in that respect as we use them as a tool. But kids do not need a personal device at their desk. Mm-hmm. And this is so frustrating for all the young parents we have in our group that say that their third grade kids are coming home and they are having, you know, all these questions about the Chromebook. I'm like, okay, we can use this. You know, we can use this technology, but we don't have to use it in the hands of every kid every minute of every day. This is not helpful. We need to use this technology in the classroom as a tool and not as a toy. And kids are naturally going to take everything they have and turn it into a toy, right? So the personal screen. So the one thing that parents can do is not send their kid to school with a phone. That would solve a big part of it. The second thing they can do is they really need to talk to their teachers about how much technology is being used, how much screen time is being used, and can they tone it down? You can ask for accommodations for your kid, put them in the front of the class, and let them actually pay attention to the teacher. The other thing that I would have to just throw in here that just came to my mind is, if you've got kids in younger grades, talk to the teacher about using movies as time fillers and videos and stuff. I hear this a lot from parents that they tell the kids if they get their homework done, then they can watch some Disney show. And that's a really bad idea to have that in school. But what have you got to say about personal screens?
Yeah. So the one thing I did want to add here, and I know it does depend on what college or university you end up going to, but I would say that more colleges are banning laptops from classes and lectures. So, I mean, I went to a liberal arts college and we weren't allowed to have laptops in the classroom unless we had to have special accommodation. But the thing about that is, if universities and colleges are starting to, you know, really force a ban on personal screens in the classroom, if your child is spending all of elementary school and all of high school taking notes on a laptop and not actually learning how to practice good note taking, they are not going to be set up for success in college when that crutch is taken away from them. So they really need to know how to actively learn without a personal screen in elementary school, in high school, because it will better prepare them for college.
Absolutely. I hear that too all the time. And if you've got kids that are just in elementary or middle school right now, you're not even thinking about college, but you've got to think ahead and understand where they're headed. And you're exactly right that they need to learn how to take notes on paper. They need to be able to read their own handwriting. Mm-hmm. There's so many kids that don't practice handwriting. And you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So it's really important in middle school and high school to take handwritten notes. In fact, in our school, one of the teacher, he says you can take notes in class on your computer, but when you go home, you have to handwrite them. He makes them handwrite them. So you might as well just handwrite them in class.
Yeah, exactly.
To get used to that. So we could go on and on and on. We've got so much to talk to y'all about all this, but what we're going to do is wrap up with some tips so we can wrap up this podcast. And we definitely will be visiting this again in this first part of the school year, because there's just so many questions that we have. We'll do a Q&A show on this and get Dr. Stacy on even to talk more about it. So let's just wrap up with some of our tips. So while you are doing your school shopping right now, there's a couple tips here mixed in that I think will really help you. You know, we get so consumed with shopping for shoes and clothes and ordering the uniforms and the sports physicals and getting locker supplies that we forget the most important prep. And that is, how are we going to prep around screens? We don't spend enough time taming the screen tiger in the beginning of the school year, which is then why we get into trouble a few months down the road. Our kids are off to a really bad start. So now is the time to get ahead. So I'm going to throw out some tips to you. Number one, read the book Screen School. We just talked about that a minute ago. Please read this book. It is so good. Just so you understand. And so you're just ahead. Your job as a coach of your kids, as the parent coach, is to stay ahead of what they're getting ready to do and to stay ahead of the game. So get that book and read that book. Number two, let schools know now that your child will not be toting a smartphone to school, and give them your number for emergencies. We've done this with all three of our kids, four of our kids, actually. Adam didn't have a smartphone either. And don't let anyone tell you that this is, you know, from the Stone Age and this won't work. It's not true. They do not need smartphones in school. You can get the Gab phone if you need to get in touch with them. It's going to be much harder for them, you know, to do all their communicating with their friends and the group text. The Gab has a function where there's no group text. Our kids still don't have group text. Remember, they have GroupMe on their computer. That's all they need for all the different teams and activities that they're doing. They don't need group text. And if you do get a Gab phone, use the code STRONG and you will get a discount. Number three, while you're shopping, get an alarm for your kid's bedroom. They still have them. They still make them. Go find a cheap alarm that they can use in their bedroom. They do not need their phones in the bedroom. So while you're getting those new shoes, get a alarm clock for your kids. They get a real alarm, and get them a watch too. You can get a really cheap digital watch for them, not a phone watch. I'm just talking about a basic watch. It doesn't even need to be digital. They should learn how to tell time, by the way. Most kids are really struggling with knowing how to tell time because of the digital watches. So get them a watch so they can watch their time. They can understand time management better, and they can get places on time. They don't need their phone for a clock or an alarm. Number four, sign them up now for extracurricular activities. After you're done with this podcast, go to your school's website, figure out what extra activities are there for their age and for their grade. Do it now. Research says that if kids are in two extracurricular activities for at least 2 years during high school, they do much better in all of their academic life, their social life, their work life. Everything is fascinating with this research. We have this also in our course, in our Screen Strong course on our site. We have all the research in this about extracurricular activities. So you've got to learn more about that. By the way, get the course if you don't have it. There's so much good information in there, but this research will change your mind. And if your kids don't want to take a certain extracurricular activity, that's okay. There's a lot of things that kids don't want to do that they need to do. So find a friend, sign up with them with a friend, and get over that hump and get them involved. You want to let them pick to a point, but I would say through middle school, parents still has to kind of pick what their kids are doing. It does need to fit in with your family and your work schedule and your time. Find something that they can do where they have a couple extracurricular activities, and do it now. Think about it now. Don't wait till next month. Number five, order some textbooks. Find out from your school teachers right now what textbooks they're going to be using. And you may not be able to get one for every class, but get textbooks. You can keep them at home. They don't have to carry them necessarily back and forth. They can do their homework using the textbooks. Number six, set habits on the first day of school. Do homework right when kids get home from school, then go outside and play. Set habits early in the year. Don't wait till their grades are slipping and then you have to backtrack the homework is the biggest thing to get it done right away. In our home, we have a rule that you do your screen homework right when you walk in the door so we can put the screens away right away. You don't wait till 11 o'clock at night to start doing the homework that you need to do on your screen. We always get that done first. For older kids and younger kids, homework should be done at the kitchen table while mom is in there, hopefully, or a caretaker is in there, or it should be done somewhere where the screen is facing the adult at all times. The most amazing thing happens when this happens. Kids get their homework done so fast. It's just crazy. It's like all of a sudden, that math only took you 15 minutes instead of playing four games of Fortnite while you were trying to do it. So you want to get the homework done right away, and you want laptops to be facing you. So that this means, mom and dad, you're going to be seeing the back of your kid's head, not the front of their head when they're doing their homework. Number seven, review the blog on our site, Tips for High School. And this is about ninth grade. We wrote a blog post about how to talk about screens to your ninth graders are starting high school. And that's a really good blog post to read. We can put the link in the show notes. Number eight, determine now that at the beginning of the year that your kids will start focusing on building their life skills and start this year. Start, I don't know when you start school, if it's like next Monday, start by having them make their own lunch, make their bed every morning. Research says that kids do better in life when they make their bed every morning because they're starting the day with a successful thing and they tend to build on that success throughout the day. Have them start doing their own laundry, of course, not in the morning, but the few days ahead of time. They have to start planning when they need their basketball uniform or their soccer uniform. Packing up their backpack the night before, their sports bag, find the tennis shoes that are lost. In our house, we're always looking for socks. You know, I don't know where they go, but in the morning, they're always scrambling. So the night before, you find all the stuff that they need, and they need to do this, not you. This is part of their executive functioning skills that you're working on. They need to get to bed early. They need 9 hours of sleep. No kidding. That's a lot, but this is what they need. A lot of your problems will go away. And we know this from talking with a lot of parents that once they get that sleep hygiene taken care of and they start sleeping more, their kids start getting better in every area of life. Nine is plan now to get some friends together over the next week or so. I know it's really soon, but this is a habit that you want to start. And what this means is that you get to tell your kids, hey, why don't you find four or five friends that you want to have over this weekend or on Friday? Let's start our Friday fun nights. This is something we also have described in our course that we talk a lot about, the Friday fun nights. Start that now. Start that the beginning of the school year, and it will get you off to a great start. And your kids will love hanging out with their friends. But be that house, be the home that has kids over. And even if it's after school, one day a week, and Fridays are good because, you know, homework doesn't have to be done right away. So plan something, even if you're just meeting at the school playground, or maybe you're meeting at a park for frisbee golf, plan something now. My point is that the tip is that start now, don't wait a few months. The back to school transition is a great time to start. And my last tip is something I mentioned a little bit earlier, and that is to think about what teachers you want to have over for dinner. And I really mean this. I am a very, very big believer in our kids having adult influences in their life. And one really good way to do that is to get to know the adults in their life. And having a teacher over for dinner is a fabulous way to do this. If your kids struggle in math a little bit, then have the math teacher over and get to know the math teacher. This is just a really good tip. It also teaches your children how to be social and how to bring community and how to build a village and a tribe. This is all part of really sustaining good mental health as well. And so starting now at the beginning of the year, get your calendar out and think of three or four teachers that you want to have over between now and Christmas and just get those dates and talk to the teachers. And so those are our tips. Olivia, do you have anything else to wrap up with, any back to school tips before we bug out?
I would just say pay attention to some of the things we've talked about. Like Melanie has said throughout this episode, these tips and facts and everything have come not only from Melanie's own experience, my observations as a student, but also this is what we hear from parents all the time, be it on the Facebook group, you know, them sending us emails and workshops. This is for you all and you can do it. And I personally wish you all a very good school year.
Thank you. And please email us any of your questions. We will answer them. So don't get discouraged. We are here to help you. We will help you make this the best year ever. It's a new start. Don't look back. Only look ahead. I hope that is encouraging for you. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us. So I hope everyone enjoyed listening today. A couple things before we leave here. Our parent online course, as you know, is available and a lot of schools are using this course. So if you are a teacher listening, please be in touch with us about a group discount for this course to educate your community and your families. Along with that course comes a 30-day detox to get your kids back on track. Don't forget to join our community and get support from like-minded families. You need support and your kids need support. Stay tuned for information on a new platform that we are creating on our site. We're about to announce that, but right now our Facebook group is still going strong and it is called Screen Strong Families is the name of it. So you can jump in there, but know that very soon we're getting ready to make an announcement about some wonderful things on our site that will help you build your community and your local area. If you have not made the switch yet, get the Gab phone, use the code STRONG for a discount. We like it better than many of the other phones out there that parents are trying to use for their kids. We recommend that you get the most basic plan, the Gab plan, which is only talk and text. What's your homework today? Make a list of five friends who would enjoy this podcast. We cannot spread this message without you. This podcast is a perfect way to begin to create the tribe that your kids need. In fact, this particular episode is a great episode to give to some of your friends that you've been wanting to talk to about Screen Strong stuff. This is a great episode, just the tips on school. So remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you. So until next time, stand up for your kids and invite a teacher over for dinner this week. Stand out from the crowd and stay strong.